Mike Pence takes the oath of office outdoors. Did he set the proper tone? The new governor's budget, the prospects for an expansion of Medicaid, and taking power away from Glenda Ritz. That plus Joe Donnelly on gun control, the Mente Teo mystery, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 18, 2013.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the weather cooperated and Mike Pence took the oath of office for governor on a calm and sunny, if chilly, day.
The ceremony lasted less than 45 minutes, but that was plenty of time for Mike Pence to send the message that he believes Indiana is poised for greatness. He took time to point out that outgoing Governor Mitch Daniels, in his view, put it there.
I thank you and Sherry for your service, for leaving our state the fiscal and administrative envy of the nation.
And while his speech was short on specifics on how he hopes to create the new jobs and better schools that are his top priorities, Pence laid out some broad guidelines.
Now, to do this, we must continue to live within our means, hold the line on spending, and let Hoosiers keep more of their hard-earned income.
That's a reference to his planned 10% cut in the state income tax. The ceremony included the oath given to re-elected Attorney General Greg Zeller.
I, Gregory F. Zeller.
And the swearing-in of new Lieutenant Governor Sue Elsperman.
I, Sue Elsperman.
And a couple of hours later, Elsperman was at Governor Pence's side as he signed a series of executive orders, including one that calls for a moratorium on new regulations.
Is Mike Pence off to a good start? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, does Mike Pence appear to be ready for this challenge?
You know, there's a political adage that says when you announce your candidacy, and probably as an extension of that, when you give your first inaugural, you're entitled to a pass.
Okay.
Okay. And since really there wasn't anything substantive in the speech anyway, he hasn't offended anybody yet, so I guess he's off to a good start.
In your world, that's a pass.
In my world, that's a pass.
Okay.
Mike, the honeymoon's over, Ann. He's on you for the next 8 years.
What did you think of the tone he said?
Eight.
Four.
What do you think of the tone he said?
I thought it was perfect. An inaugural speech is supposed to be thematic. The nuts and bolts speech is going to be in the State of the State address.
Promise?
There's a difference. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They'll take the roadmap and they'll take the budget, and that'll be your State of the State speech, and that's very specific. And so this should be a thematic speech, and I thought he'd set the right tone. It was beautiful. He did it in 13 minutes, which for those of us who were sitting outside that day, we loved the fact that it was 13 minutes. But it was right on target. Set the right tone for a bipartisan approach to moving the state forward, and I thought that was well received by everybody there.
I thought the ceremony was interesting because it was a grand setting, mm-hmm. yet it was a very simple ceremony.
It was extremely simple. It was almost a little casual. I actually thought the ceremony was actually very nice. I mean, having been to a few of these, I liked that it wasn't too long. It didn't make too much of everything. I thought his speech was appropriate. There wasn't anything new. I mean, it sounded very much like his stump speeches. But I'm not sure we really expected him to do anything else.
So you agree with me then? He gets a pass. He didn't say anything.
No, I'm not going there.
Did you enjoy the ceremony?
It was a lovely ceremony. It played well on television. I decided to watch it on TV and see how it looked. And I remembered 16 years ago when it was 8 below zero and decided that think that was the wind chill. I would.
That was the wind chill. It was about 20 degrees on Monday.
I thought it was highly appropriate. I thought it was well done. You know, if you're going to give a criticism, the opening prayer and the closing prayer were the only elements that I thought, my goodness, are these going to ever finish? But, you know, he gave a great speech.
Wow.
And, well, you know, they don't get a pass.
they didn't get elected. All right. On to the first step. Governor Pence presented state lawmakers with the budget plan this week that makes his promised 10% tax cut in the state income tax possible. Governor Pence wants to phase in the tax cut, with half of it taking effect this year, half of it taking effect next year. The result is 1% increases in money to public schools as well as state universities in each year of the budget. That's well below the 2.5% inflation rate. New state budget director Chris Atkins gave the numbers to lawmakers on the state budget committee this week, spelling out a budget proposal that would also lead to $2.3 billion surplus at the end of the two-year budget and an automatic taxpayer refund at the end of each budget year. The reception was a chilly one.
Why cut income taxes by 10%? Well, most importantly, it would permanently lower taxes on most Indiana small businesses and employers, and it would put $500 million directly back into our economy by letting Hoosiers keep more of their own money.
We'd like to be heroes and cut taxes, but we know from having been through a recession how hard that can be on you, and you need to be prepared to do that. And you also need to be prepared to carry forward with your priorities, and you need to have enough money to do that.
State Senator Luke Kenley there. Mike McDaniel, does the Pence budget deliver too much pain?
Well, I'm not so sure what you mean by too much pain, but it's what you'd expect it to be. This is a difficult thing to do. Think about it. When you've been a governor for a matter of hours and you're required to present a budget, and this budget does all the stuff that he said he wanted to do during the campaign. But as everybody always says, governor's budget proposals are always a starting point for the negotiation, and this certainly is. And I think it's going to be a wait-and-see game. I don't think anybody's really going to know how far you can go with any of this until we see the April forecast. And when they see that, then they'll know what kind of money they're dealing with. But generally, there's a lot of pent-up desire. We've talked about this before in this show, to do more for education, to do more for a variety of things, including transportation.
Right.
And so subsequently, that's where the debate's going to be. Can you really afford to do what he wants to do with tax cuts and do the other things with this pent-up desire for the last few years? And that's going to be a major point of debate as this thing unfolds. And I think it all hinges on that final revenue report.
House Speaker Brian Bosma, by the end of the week, said that the House budget will spend more money for K-12 education, likely will spend more money for universities, will also spend more money for highways. And once you do that, there's not enough money for a tax cut.
There's not the money for the tax cut. I mean, the whole thing was illusory from the beginning, because what you've got here is you've had hundreds of millions of dollars in education funding cuts over the last several years. And then you're proposing a budget, when we finally have a surplus there that's worth talking about, you're proposing a budget that doesn't even keep pace with inflation. It's completely unrealistic. And, you know, I listened to that testimony about putting the $500 million back. Okay, well, we'd all like to have more money in our pockets. But it isn't as if the government sucks that up and then that money evaporates. They're going to spend it on teacher salaries. They're going to spend it on bridges and roads and public transportation and other things that's going to pump additional funds into the economy in Indiana and generate jobs and generate revenue. So I think the whole argument that he makes is incorrect, and I would think that Brian Bosma and Senator Kenley's approach here indicates that it's going to have tough sledding.
Well, it also maintains huge budget surpluses that would trigger the automatic taxpayer refund that Mitch Daniels created. I mean, this is it fiscal conservative to an extreme?
Well, there are those who argue that the point of having a budget is not to have a huge surplus. The point is to take in what you need and then spend what you need and hopefully have enough left over so that you've got some flexibility if the economy turns south. I think that's a good point, and I think that's one that will be argued a lot in the legislature this year because there are such competing demands, things that have been without increases, without a lot of investment in certain areas over time, that you're going to see a test of wills between the administration and the legislature, and that will be one of the main points, is what is an adequate level of reserves, because we are relatively new to this point of 12.5-14% reserves. Yes, the state should have money in the bank so that if the economy goes south, it won't lose a lot of revenue all of at once. But what's the appropriate amount, and should it be a goal to give money back?
I think by the end of the legislative session, Mike Pence is going to have realized how much cutting and has gone on under Mitch Daniels. I mean,
you
we're
don't
talking,
think he realizes now?
I don't. I really don't. I think he is aware that schools had some cuts and that universities have not had any increases in some cuts. But I think when he gets in there and he's hired these new agency folks, and these agency folks get in and see that state parks haven't had any money to make repairs for years, and that agencies have held open hundreds and hundreds of positions, I think there are going to be new people who are some of these new folks are going to say, if we're going to maintain the services that we have, we're going to need a little more money.
Is there a learning curve that needs to take place?
Let me just say that I think that because Mike Pence comes from a legislative-oriented background, that he understands that you've got to start with something that's pretty bare bones and austere, because by the time the end of the session comes around and the discussions take place that we've all mentioned here, he realizes there are going to be a lot of changes to this thing. So I think that's a reflection of the fact that he comes from a legislative background, not an executive branch background.
You think he's going to be flexible?
Oh, I think he's going to have to be, and he knows it, and I think that he'll deal with it. But
flexible enough to give up the tax cut?
And I will say this, because I didn't believe this early on. I didn't quite believe this when he made this proposal early on. But I do believe that there is money to do what he says to do here with the tax cut and these other things. The question becomes, how big do you want that reserve to be? And I think that's what's going to be determined when we get that forecast in April.
Well, in answer to your question, it doesn't matter how flexible he is, because if the legislature digs in its heels and doesn't pass a budget with that cut in it, he's stuck, number one. And number two is he does have a huge learning curve. He hasn't even lived in Indiana for years, and he has to learn what's going on here first before he can be governor.
Certainly had an official residency.
Where was that pass? Where was that first week pass?
That was on the speech. That wasn't on the program.
Okay. This is the pass.
What's interesting to me is the automatic taxpayer refund, because essentially this budget delivers three tax cuts in that case.
Yeah,
and very little in the way of spending.
But do you think
increases.
That's how that will end up at the end?
No.
Thank you. All right, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, what's more important, money to schools or an income tax cut? Your choices are A, money to schools, B, tax cut, or C, a little of both. Last week's question was, do you still use cursive writing? 85% said yes, 10% said no, 5% said never did. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Here's a question. Should state government take part in the president's health care reform plan?
If the state chooses to expand Medicaid, 400,000 low-income Indiana residents would join the ranks of those who have access to medical care. State lawmakers in the Republican majorities, including budget writer Dr. Tim Brown, say they are considering it despite a price tag that could top $50 million.
I think right now that we need to look at it. I'm not totally against it.
Democrats are impatient. They say federal matching funds and growth in the health care system would make up for the investment, and at this news conference accused Republicans of avoiding the Medicaid expansion for political reasons.
The Affordable Care Act is here and is here to stay. We need to stop ignoring it or running away from it, because it is there. It is law.
We need local control, and participation in this is inevitable.
Answering questions after his first cabinet meeting, Governor Mike Pence said he's open to a Medicaid expansion, but also said it's up to the legislature.
My bias going forward is any expansion of Medicaid would have to be fiscally responsible.
John Katzenberger, is expanding Medicaid the responsible thing to do?
I think it is, because as Representative Brown said, the Affordable Care Act is not going anywhere. The federal government is making these funds available for the states to implement expansions, to administer those expansions. I think the real question is, what level should Indiana expand, and what does it feel like it can afford at the end of that round of federal funding, can afford to fund on an ongoing basis? I think that's probably where the discussion is going to end up, especially given Governor Pence's answer to the question about what the legislature, if it's up to the legislature, I think that's where you're going to find this.
This can be very confusing. There are two major decisions state government has to make with regard to the Affordable Care Act. One is whether or not to set up an insurance exchange. And Mike Pence has already said that Indiana won't do that. The federal government needs to take that responsibility. The other is the expansion of Medicaid. And I find it interesting that the governor's leaving that to the legislature.
Oh, I really think that's interesting, too. But I think the big question here is, how much is the federal government going to be flexible on how states expand their Medicaid programs? So when the Affordable Care Act passed, of course, this Medicaid expansion was a mandate. When the U.S. Supreme Court made it an option, I think that meant states like Indiana could make a legitimate argument that they'd be willing to expand Medicaid if they were allowed to use, for instance, the Healthy Indiana Plan. I think if federal officials were more flexible about what states could do, I actually think they'd find broad support in the legislature to pass an expansion.
One of the things that some Republicans are saying is that maybe it makes sense to let other states do this, work out the bugs, and then do it later.
Well, that's basically one of the things that Tim Brown suggested early on, shortly after becoming named Ways and Means Chairman. I think the fact that Dr. Brown is open to this idea as the Ways and Means Chairman and the governor giving the answer he gave, I think, John, it's absolutely correct. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about this over the course of the time, and I think eventually Indiana will participate in a bigger way than what you think they're going to right now. But I think there will be some that want to do exactly what you suggested and wait and see what happens with other states.
And if Indiana gets in, it's going to have a big effect on the rest of the budget.
Sure it is.
It's going to have an effect on the budget. It's also going to have an effect on the population. We're talking about between 300,000 and 400,000 people in Indiana without health care coverage. And, you know, we're all paying federal taxes here. And you mean to tell me when they see that people in Illinois and Ohio and other states have it and they're paying taxes and they don't have it, that nobody's going to raise the question of why not us? And as far as the health, and what we're talking about here, and particularly even with the health exchange, we're talking about a job creator. The estimates are getting involved in this the way we're talking about will generate 28,000 Hoosier jobs. Mm-hmm. And we do it our way as opposed to the way the federal government tells us we have to run the exchange. What happened to local government in this? You know, they can stop fighting. They've lost. It is constitutional. It is the law. And now they ought to put some of their own rhetoric to work here.
But the law does allow states to make a choice.
Sure.
The court allowed Indiana to make a choice about Medicaid,
right.
but they also allowed them to make a choice about the exchange. And so I think it's completely appropriate to have a discussion and a debate about what
you can afford
and
what you want to do.
But the idea has always been that the smaller or the more local the unit of government, the better. And we have the chance to hire people and locate those offices around Indiana rather than having it dictated to us, and we're saying, no.
But, well, nobody's going to make a commitment to this until we get to April and they
right.
find out where the budget is and what the revenue
well,
is.
Well, the exchange
exactly.
issue has right. already been settled, though.
I think Indiana can still do with a joint exchange
sure.
as well.
Absolutely.
I think so.
It's known as a partnership
it's
exchange.
It's a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
All right.
Governor Pence took some responsibility away from new Democratic Superintendent of Public Instruction Glenda Ritz this week. Pence signed an executive order that directs the board that oversees teacher contract negotiations to report to the governor. Former Governor Mitch Daniels gave that authority to the state superintendent's office. Ritz says she opposed the Daniels change and approves of what Pence did.
I don't want to be in that position. I'm glad that he did the executive order, and it's going to operate as a separate entity, as it should.
Leslie Weidenbender, is that a surprising reaction?
I'm very surprised by it. I do give her points for consistency. She didn't like it when Governor Daniels did it, so she's okay with it being transferred back. But, I mean, here was an opportunity for her to actually have a tiny bit of authority, and I was surprised that she gave it up so willingly.
We've seen a lot of people in politics who have a position before they get in an office, and then they get in office, they got a different viewpoint. But she... This has taken power away from her. Wouldn't you try to hold on to it?
Well, you would think on the face of it you would, but it is consistent, and it really is something that really shouldn't have fallen. It shouldn't have been moved to begin with, is the argument that I've heard a lot this week, is that it should have been where it was all along. And so style points, very good, and it also lets her say when other things come up, look, I saw things your way, now try to see things my way. And I think it's, you know, I think it's the responsible response.
Yeah. She's trying to get along.
No, I think she's doing what she thinks is right for education, which is why she was elected in the first place. She didn't think it was correct before, and regardless of whether it diminishes whatever power she may have be perceived to have, she's consistent with that now. And that's what she's all about from beginning to end, is doing what she thinks is best for education and not politics. So I think she deserves more than style credit. I think she and consistency credit.
You give her credit?
No. Well, I give her credit for saying what she said, but the fact of the matter is the leaders on her transition team, which is a very political team, told her this was a good idea, and she went out and said the same thing.
And they told you they told her that?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, they did.
Huh?
Confided in you,
yep,
Michael?
They did.
All right. President Obama this
the
week.
The answer is yes.
Strange things happen at the State House. President Obama this week signed 23 executive orders and asked Congress to make other changes to create greater gun control. Indiana's new Senator, Democrat Joe Donnelly, is a supporter of the Second Amendment, but while Indiana Republicans in Congress attacked the president's approach, he expressed a willingness to support at least some of the president's program.
And that's what those two things. Would you vote to ban assault weapons? Would you vote to limit the amount of ammunition?
Well, we don't know what shape the legislation is going to be in. And my expectation is actually that the first thing that would come up is the background checks, and background checks for people who have mental health challenges. And so,
and extending them to the gun control or the gun shows as well.
Right, and I expect that'll be the first part of the discussion, and I think we can tighten those up.
And Delaney, can the president expect much help on this issue from Indiana?
Well, he ought to, because I think there's a national consensus around the fact that we need to do something. And I think Joe Donnelly's approach is the right approach. He's always been a Second Amendment supporter, and he's always won endorsements from groups that are concerned about the Second Amendment. But yet, like a lot of thinking people, he is saying, okay, within the protection of the Second Amendment, are there things that we can do to make our country safer? And what they're talking about with the background checks, I don't know that any reasonable person would argue that someone with a mental health problem should have access to an assault weapon. I mean, maybe the NRA would still make that argument. I don't know. But they shouldn't. And all he's saying is that reasonable people need to cut the venom out of the dialogue and sit down and figure out a way to make this work. And I think the congressional members on the Republican side ought to do likewise.
Well, Indiana Senator Dan Coats, a Republican, is somebody who's being watched closely in this, because when he was in the Senate the last time, he voted for the Brady Bill and the assault weapons ban, yet he issued a statement that was critical of what the president said now. Do you think his positions have changed over time?
Well, clearly it has, because he's voted for the ban on assault weapons before at the request of police chiefs around the country, if I remember at the time, was his argument for doing so. But his position changed on that during the campaign, not just now. He talked about that during the campaign when he ran for this office. So, you know, that's not a surprise that he made the statement he said. You know, they're all going to look at this, and there should be a debate on these issues. And they're all going to look at this, but they're all saying they're supporting the Second Amendment, including Joe Donnelly. And they will at the end of the day. I mean, that's where that's going. And as far as the mental health checkoff, on people getting access to guns in almost every state, that's already a prerequisite in the law. It is in Indiana.
Doesn't look like there's going to be much help from Indiana.
I don't think there will be much help at all from Indiana. When you talk about the national consensus for changes to federal gun laws, I'm not sure that you're really talking about Hoosiers necessarily, although, frankly, I would love to see it some evidence of where Hoosiers are on this issue right now.
He may get two votes out of Indiana, Pete Visklosky and Andre Carson. But I think really one of the bigger points here is that you can support the Second Amendment without being an absolutist on everything, and litmus tests are bad for public policy.
Well, and the question also is whether the NRA speaks for all gun owners, too, and whether the
and
NRA represents...
Clearly it doesn't.
Well, and whether the NRA's real role is to represent gun manufacturers rather than gun owners.
And the fact that it only has 4 million members, considering the size of the country...
Yeah.
Has an outsized influence.
Finally, Notre Dame football star Manti Te'o said his girlfriend's death and the support he got from fellow students after it inspired him to play better through the team's remarkable season. But Notre Dame now says the girlfriend wasn't real. The university held a news conference this week after the website Deadspin.com reported it could find no record of Lene Kakua existing. The university says that Te'o informed his coaches that he had been the victim of what appeared to be a hoax.
I want to stress, as someone who has probably been in as engaged in this as anyone in the past couple of weeks, that nothing about what I have learned has shaken my faith in Manti Te'o one iota.
Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick there, Mike McDaniel. Will this hurt Te'o's football career?
Probably not. I mean, you know, unless they find out somehow that he was a participant in this hoax, then obviously that would damage his credibility for anything he does. But look, when Jack Swarbrick went to the microphone and said what he said, Jack Swarbrick is of the highest integrity. If he said that this kid was duped, I believe he was duped.
Will it hurt his love life?
Ooh.
Oh,
that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.